roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Anxious to talk to you all today as we recap last night's one on TNT card, preview tonight's PFL card, and then Saturday's UFC card. We also have a cool guest. You can already see him, Jacob Stitch Duran. He's going to join us to start the show off. And as always, we will cover the latest news. So there's a quick intro on a Thursday, April 29th. What is going on, everybody, here on a Thursday? Stitch Duran joining us to start the show. Man, I can't think of a cooler guy to hang out with us. It's been a while, Stitch. How you doing, brother?
Yeah, it has been a while, man. I sure miss you guys, you know, just that one-on-one. And I see you gave Steve, our buddy Steve, a tribute the other day. And, yeah, it's good to get the band back together. But I'm doing good. You know, I got to head off a little earlier. I got to Tyson Fury's training up at the gym at 10 o'clock. So once I finish up, shoot up there.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, he's in town, huh, doing his thing.
Yeah. He's in town. He's here actually to support Billy Joe Saunders. He's fighting Canelo. And but he's sticking around, probably do some negotiating and all that. So just going to go and welcome him to Las Vegas and see what's up for the future.
I mean, since we're on the Fury thing and then we'll move to MMA, how what's he like? How's he been to work with?
He's tremendous, man. You know, just a down-to-earth guy, 100%. You know, he still has that Irish traveler mentality, which is great. You know, I've met, you know, a few of these guys and they're all the same, man. Very loving, very family, and very respectful. So for me, it's a pleasure, George and Goz, just to be part of his team.
Very cool. All right. I know the boxing's been keeping you busy. I see you a lot, you know, over at the MGM bubble. So that's great. Give us an update on that. When are you working next? So we can catch you, doing your thing in the sport of the sweet science.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm back on the road again. I've done three shows back to back to back. I was in Orlando last week for Top Rank, and week before I was in Atlanta for the Thriller show.
Right.
With Ben Askren and Jake Paul. And then the week before I was in Tulsa with Top Rank again. And I did like 26 shows in the bubble here in the MGM. But May the 24th is my next show. And then every weekend in June, I'm booked. So staying busy, man. That got to be back on the road.
What about how's the Mayans so far? You've done a great job.
Yeah, thank you.
And I did review.
You know what? I cut my hair yesterday because it was longer, right? And everybody hit me up with that Edward James almost Mayan thing. And I said, nah, let me cut it, man. It look a little bit different.
You watch the show?
No. I've seen it.
You like it?
Yeah, I should tune into it. You know, especially to support the Raza and Edward James Olmos.
The first, you know, it broke off from Sons of Anarchy. Sons of Anarchy was based in Northern California, so even if you're not into the whole biker scene thing, I think it was just it's kind of cool because they reference a lot of cities, and you know, and then they bring in a motorcycle club called the Mayans, and then this show becomes the Mayans. Now they're based down in Southern California, but It's. I just think it's a cool show, whether you like, you know, motorcycle club stuff or not. I just think it's a great show done on FX. Mike Beltran's in it.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I just saw American Me. I guess in Netflix, it's you know one of the top 10 shows to watch, and it was kind of nice to see my man at a younger stage and see the dialogue. You know, the Vato and the Ruca and La Ranfla, and you know the old Chicano Pachuco type of language. And,
right.
I'm trying to show Charlotte the translations, what they mean. And she's picking up on it pretty good.
Hey, Vinci Vato was just doing his fucking job, eh? Remember when he was at the shoe store?
Simone is it?
He goes, hey, look at me when I talk to you. He was like, God damn, man, relax. Anyway, hey, you know, Goz, brilliant booking because he remembered that you were in the corner of Anderson Silva. No, Chris Weidman. He was the champion. You were always in the red corner when Chris broke Anderson's leg, you know, about 8 years ago or whatever. And then this, can you believe it, Stitch? Out of all the odds, there's only been three of these that we can remember in the UFC. Corey Hill, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman. But Chris Weidman was on the giving end of the Anderson Silva. Imagine those odds. Now, I know it's happened in kickboxing, and you probably heard of some others, maybe Muay Thai. I don't know. But to for Chris Weidman to be involved in two of those, just that is so eerie, you know. But can you what do you remember about the night that Chris broke Anderson's leg?
Yeah, well, actually, I was involved in two of them. You know, I was there with Corey Hill. And
you're right, yeah.
I remember when he broke his leg, you know, I run into the ring and I'm literally down on my knees and I have his head right here and he's screaming in pain and he says, you know, Stitch, what happened? What happened? And I mean, I look at his leg, Georgian goes and his leg is this way and his foot is this way. And I said, you broke your leg, scream as much as you want, you know, and he was looking for his father. So Don House went to look for his father. And, you know, then they shot him up with morphine and they put him on the stretcher. And as he's walking out, a great, great line, man. He says, Stitch, I almost had him, and that was with Dale Hart. So, but yeah, with Anderson Silva, that really broke my heart. The one who calls me Papi, you know, we had a great relationship, but, you know, an hour before I was wrapping his hands, I had already wrapped Chris Weidman's hand, and, you know, I was telling my son Jacob last night, as soon as he sit down, I'm down getting stuff in my bucket, and I hear the sound of a broken branch, and right off the bat, I knew exactly what it was, and you know, I got my eyes back and I went in there and I saw what I saw with Corey Hill. But, you know, there's nothing that I could do at that point, you know, but it really bummed me out for a couple of days. And just, you know, to see what happened with Chris Weidman, what God, man, it was a deja vu moment. And, you know, I just feel sorry for both these guys. And you know, I hope Chris gets a real, real speedy recovery and hope he's back to normal.
Now, I know you're not a doctor or a psychologist, but I think the question's fair. What did you see in Anderson Silva and Corey Hill that night up close that was different? Because obviously they lost. But yeah. What was different from what they were feeling at that moment versus a fighter that gets knocked out or submitted and them losing? They're both devastating, but this had to be something like completely different.
Yeah, you know, the pain that they went through, Georgian Goals, was extraordinary, you know, just to see, you know, that compound break, you know, where the foot is going one way, you know, it was horrible to look at, you know, and you just don't want to put that on anybody. And, you know, to see how Chris threw that, you know, that calf check and, you know, he got checked on and then tried to step on that leg. I guess they all do that. And yeah. There was just no support. But, you know, I know once, listen, being a kickboxer, you know, I've done a lot of shin checks and it hurts. You know, so I know Chris and all three of them, I know they felt that initial pain, not knowing that their leg was broken until they tried to step on it. And there was just, you know, nothing held up.
Stitch, I know in your career, you've probably seen a lot of things, but even something like that, can that get to you? Like, do you even need a moment to kind of recollect yourself? Because you said something very interesting. You said you remember what it sounded like a branch. And I had one of these happen right in front of me. And I always, the one thing I remember is the sound. And about a month ago, somebody was emptying out the ice tray. And that noise was very similar to that crack. And it gave me chills. So do these things kind of stick with you? Does it take a while to get over them?
Yeah, you know, like I was saying with Anderson Silva, because, you know, I had a great relationship with him. And you know, just to hear that. But, you know, normally after these shows, you know, I work on cuts and knockouts and all that, and I'll go home and, you know, I'll go to Roberto's Tacos, get my tacos, eat, and, you know, and watch a little TV, go to sleep. But with Anderson Silva, man, it bummed me out for literally about 3 days. And, you know, I understand how Chris Weidman is feeling at this point and, you know, even his coaches, you know. So, yeah, it's not, you know, it's the worst case scenario for any type of fighter.
Do you think a fighter can come back 100%? And I don't mean physical. What I mean is mentally. Throwing that kick again, all that, it's going to take some time. But can they get to the spot where they no longer think about that?
I don't think so. You know, I think that's always going to be in your mind, you know, especially such a broken a leg like that. There's always that one point, you know, the shell shock syndrome, I guess, as they call it in the combat sports. And I don't see that any different from Chris Weidman or Anderson Silva. you know. So, yeah, I just hope he gets better, man.
Do you still keep in touch with some of these guys, and in particular Chris Weidman? I remember Chris Weidman was one of the ones that took it hard when he found out you were no longer with the UFC, because apparently you guys had – he had good luck with you in his corner. I guess you caught him right in his prime. And I think even at one point, I don't know if it was on this show, but we even joked about he could be, I guess, because technically he could bring you on as his own personal comment. We've seen that happen before, and I think it was considered. But anyway, back to the question. Do you still keep in touch with any of these guys or even Chris Weidman?
No, I don't. You know, but it's nice. You know, I'll go into some shows and I'll run into some of the old guys. And you know, it's funny because Luis, the Brazilian trainer, that works with Anderson and all these guys, was in the bubble for a boxing match, and you know, and he comes up. I haven't seen him in 5-6 years. Georgian goes, and he comes up, and first thing he said, he goes, "Steesh," he says, "us coaches and us fighters have so much respect for you because you spoke up when we couldn't." And you know, to me, that was such an admirable thing. And you know, guys like Chris Weidman that you know, wanted me, and they felt bad because I had left. You know, those are very special moments for me, and they're feelings that, you know, you can't go out there and buy. And, you know, you had mentioned I'm not a doctor or a psychologist, but I think on the psychological edge, Georgian goes, I bring a lot of security to these guys. So, yeah, I miss them, you know, but it's nice to see them every once in a while. I think when I saw you guys at the Red Rock when they had that big wrestling tournament, I went in the back and it was like a big reunion. Everybody came up and started hugging me and all that. And, you know, that was a good feeling.
I remember that. It was a submission grappling, and they had Pride and UFC, WEC, and I think Strikeforce. What was it called, Gus? Do you remember?
Quintet.
Quintet, that's right. Quintet, yeah. I remember that. I was. In fact, that had a devastating injury. I think Jake Shields, when he submitted Cub Swanson, I think one of his ligaments were torn. I can't remember if it was an ACL or what it was, but yeah. Man, you go as a fan, and you know, you've gone as a somebody who's working, and God, all we want to do is go in there and see two guys or gals compete. We know there's going to be some violence. We know, you know, there's going to be some hurt feelings or whatever, but boy, anything that can keep somebody out for a whole year, you know, and is like a life changer. That's the one, you know, you really don't want. You can recover from getting choked out or I guess even knocked out to, you know, but these, man, this one's a tough one to come back for Weidman, but I think he can do it.
Yeah, well, let's hope so, man. I got a lot of respect for him. And I mean, a little side note to Shevchenko, the girl that we did the tour with. Guys, she's doing great, man. So if you guys get her on the radio show again, send her my best.
Yeah, she looked good. I don't know if you saw it, but yeah, she Valentina's something else. She really is, man. All right, Stitch, I know you got to get going. We don't want to make him furious if you show up late. So thank you for the time, as always. And now that things are opening up, I can't wait to run into you, give you a hug. It's been too long.
All right, man. Love you guys, man. Thanks, Goals and George. See you guys somewhere.
All right, Stitch. Take care. We'll see you. Love you, buddy. See ya. All right, there he is, Stitch Duran. The great Stitch Duran, legendary boxing and MMA and Muay Thai and bare knuckle cut man. Folks, also tonight is – why am I wearing this? It's the NFL draft. And we got the number 3 pick. So I'm anxious to see in what direction we're going to go. I mean, it's pretty obvious we're going to get a quarterback. Who? I don't know. How about you, Goz? Do you have any idea of what you're going to get, and does it match with what you think you need?
Well, it's looking like I've seen a couple mock drafts, and we end up mostly with defensive players, but it looks like a linebacker is what we're going to end up with.
That's kind of high for a linebacker, a number 1, isn't it?
High?
Yeah, linebackers usually don't go in the first round or high in the first round. Quarterbacks, you know, and once in an era type receivers, corners as well. But I've noticed linebackers don't go. A good defensive rusher for sure. A great offensive tackle that you'll have there for 10, 12 years for sure. Mm-hmm. Certain get sacrificed a little bit. Like, I don't see too many safeties go high or too many linebackers go high.
I honestly, I know it's kind of boring, but I love when somebody gets – when our team gets an offensive lineman, because they're the ones that seem to stick around the longest and you get the most use out of them. Them or, like, a corner. I love getting those type of players.
That Surtain guy. Where are you guys drafting? What number do you know?
I think we're like in the middle. I think it's something like 15 or 16 or something like that.
The guy from Alabama, Surtain, I'd love to get him, but I just don't see how he gave away additional number ones. I think a number three. We're not going to do all that for a corner, but the corner from Alabama, I'd love to get someone like him because if you can keep him around, those guys are difference makers. From what I remember, your D is pretty solid.
Yeah, it's not bad. We're kind of weird because we're not that bad in every position. It's just we were having problems at quarterback. I wouldn't mind getting a nice wide receiver, a big one, to kind of spread things out a little bit. But I just don't see them getting that at that pick.
Yeah. All right. Last night's one on TNT, Rainer DeRitter defeated Ong Lasong. Now Rainer DeRitter is 2-0 against Ong Lasong, but more importantly, he's a champ. Over at one championship. He's their light heavyweight and middleweight champ.
I thought Michael Chavello said the funniest thing last night. He was saying that he can't remember a moment in history where a fighter has practically stalked another fighter in that fashion. Where, remember, they fought for the middleweight title. He took the middleweight title. And then he was right back there to say, hey, it's me. I'm here again, and now I'm coming after you. I mean, you would think that this is like a storyline in a movie, right, where somebody's family was murdered and this guy wants revenge or something. Like, he is on him, dude. And the fight, it was different from the first fight. You know, you got to give Ong Lasong a little bit of credit. I mean, he didn't get finished, but he was kind of on the defense the whole fight. And he had his moments here and there, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, it was rinse and repeat pretty much, and that's why the scores were the way they were. DeRitter's now saying he'd like to go for the heavyweight title, which, by the way, is worn by a guy that used to compete as a light heavyweight in the UFC, so he's not the biggest heavyweight per se, and he's also a little bit older in age. DeRitter only at 30, 14-0. He's 6'4". He's just not a filled-out frame for heavyweight, but we'll see. You know, we'll see. When you're 14-0 and you've taken out the champ, you know, in different fashions, then sure, shoot for the moon and see if you can become a champ. Speaking of the word champ, former Bellator and UFC lightweight champ Eddie Alvarez, this has not been a good April for him over at one on TNT. If you'll recall, in week one, he had the disqualification, which got overturned to a no contest. Okay, well, no harm, no foul there. But now he comes back and faces Ray Yun-Ok and lost last night a unanimous decision. So there is no 10-9s or nothing like that, folks. It's basically a decision, right? They judge over the course of 15 minutes for non-title fights, 25 minutes for title fights. So all three judges were unanimous in saying, we think Ray Yun-Ok won the fight over Eddie Alvarez. I thought Eddie Alvarez was definitely on the comeback trail, and I guess I was hoping they'd say. I mean, I know I'm supposed to stay objective, but I really don't know much about the other guy, and I'm one of the ones that has said I really want to see Eddie Alvarez capture three world titles if possible, just like Bendo's trying to do, former WEC and UFC, just like what Pettis is trying to do, former WEC and UFC, kind of like what Gil Melendez tried to do, former WEC and Strikeforce. Get that third title in the lightweight division. I think that would be pretty epic.
Mm-hmm. That fight, they judge it on the entirety of the fight, right? And I just think what happened early on with Eddie getting put down and just looking kind of shooken up, I think that's just really hard to overcome. The commentators were doing a good job of I think they made it sound like the fight was a little closer than it was, but I felt like OK was just kind of holding. He had his big lead, and then Eddie would chip at it a little bit, but he would just bring it right back. So I always felt like he had this big lead that never really went away. For Eddie, I don't really know how to – I don't want to say that it's one of those situations where you look at a fighter and go, oh, he's done or anything like that. Because – and the same thing with Demetrius Johnson. They've just run into tough fighters. Like, I honestly think that guy's pretty good. Oh. Some people
he's
say
big too.
Okay, but
I feel like he's strong and fast. I was impressed by him for sure. He's 15-3 now, and Eddie Alvarez falls to 30-8.
I just feel like maybe Eddie has gotten away from his wrestling a little bit. I think he can do that a little bit more earlier in fights. But honestly, Eddie, I ran into a good fighter.
Eddie wrestled Ghost. You said he got
I think he gets away from it a little bit. I think whenever he gets hit, whenever they're exchanging, he's too complacent with wanting to sit there and bang with someone, where I think he should use that opportunity to fake that he's going to throw a punch and shoot in on a fighter, because that guy was just too comfortable.
Okay. Kirill Grishenko defeated Umar Khan or Kane. All I know is Rig is what I call him. And this was kind of controversial because Grishenko clipped him at the end of round two, and it looked like he got him in the throat, not like a throat shot, you know. Yeah. But basically it was a hook that got him late. And Rigrig was saying, well, wait a minute, you know, like, what's going on here? He was basically down. They have the little picture-in-picture shot as they go to commercial, and I could tell, okay, this one's going to come to a halt. But what happened was the bell did ring. It was after the bell. But remember, you're supposed to fight until the referee steps in, right, and separates you two. And so under that definition, the referee, who I think could have maybe been a little closer, but I wouldn't say he was completely out of position. I thought he was right there. That's what the 10-second clapper is for. So mm-hmm. he points to let them know and acknowledge that he's heard it, and he's getting closer and closer. Not close enough that he's going to disrupt anything, but just close enough to know, hey, I want to get in here and, you know, as soon as I can. And so the bell sounds, the punch comes in. He had already said stop, but he physically hadn't come in. And so thereby, by definition, the other guy just couldn't, you know, he was down and you know, the round hadn't ended yet. The referee hadn't halted it yet. So kind of controversial, maybe the type of fight that they may actually have the two guys run back. But Grishenko cashes. He was almost a 4-1 underdog. Rugrug was like -5 something, depending on where you were at, 520, 580. So that was pretty big. So was Ray Young OK. He was a pretty big underdog as well. So if you're an underdog player, you did well last night on TNT4, which completes their April run on TNT. And it's been pretty fabulous. I wouldn't say it's been a 10 out of 10. But I think it's a great start for what they're trying to do, establish themselves in North America. Also, shout out to Shinya Aoki, who defeated Edward Foley Yang, submitted him with an armbar.
I think if you're an underdog player, you're probably not watching the show. You're probably on your yacht celebrating, right? Because like the last week and a half has just been insane for you. Been making a lot of money on underdogs. But, you know, tell me if I'm reading a little bit too much into this. But if you're watching ONE Championship, what happened in that fight was they went to commercial because it was the end of the round, and then they came back and said, wait a minute, this is what we missed, right? Because the guy dropped kind of – at first he kind of went like this, and then he dropped, right?
Yeah, so we thought during the commercial he would probably get up and he'd be on the stool. So go ahead.
Right. But if you remember at the end of round one, I believe it was, he was kind of on – Rugrug was on top of him for a little bit longer than he probably should have. Like even the referee had to kind of like pull him off, which was weird. Because he had a reaction like, get off me. Like, what are you doing? But
and then he pulled him up like a gentleman.
Yeah, so I'm curious if he didn't maybe stick around a little bit. Like once you hear the 10-second clap, like he just decided to keep throwing because he thought maybe he would try and do that again. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much. Because it was just so close to the bell. But I don't know. That's kind of how I saw it.
I didn't see it as a dirty punch. And I can't imagine that everything we hear or anyone around the ring that doesn't have like elevated adrenaline, you know, coursing through them, through their bodies. Who knows? If you know how you always say, sometimes I don't hear the fans, but I can hear my coach, or sometimes I don't hear anything. It's just a blur. And that's why they need the referee to actually jump in there. So they may not even hear the bell, but I think they have an idea, you know, and I think most of them do, but some just really zone out. I didn't interpret it as a dirty punch.
No, not dirty.
Later punches than that.
Not dirty, just sticking around a little longer because of what happened in round one. So sometimes guys will almost unwind with about 5 seconds left. They probably won't throw a strike with about 3 seconds left.
Maybe.
The round's going to end. Maybe. I think maybe he stuck around and just made sure he was fighting till the very end because of what happened at the end of round one. But I don't think he was trying to be dirty.
You should ask Eric Nixick, you know, or one of the coaches that we talk to frequently, maybe Wood if we go down to Syndicate. Is it a strategy to uncork something when your clock, you know, you've heard 10, and in your mind you're probably, you know, I don't know if you have time to do a countdown yourself, but if you're pretty familiar with how 10 seconds may unfold, if maybe there is a strategy to unfolding or to unleashing, uncorking with a couple seconds left, because you're not out of line unless the referee steps in, even if the bell sounded, you know. Now, that may seem a little dirty, but it can't be as – it can't be like any other sport where they, you know, grab shirts and, you know, think about the way you slide into second base. Some guys do it really clean. Some guys will just go out of the way, and some guys will take you out. Some guys are just nasty, or gals, you know what I mean? Some are just nasty with their elbows in basketball or late hits in football. You know, there's some coaches that have bounties, you know. Some people just like to really trudge on the rules, send a message. That's how they coach. Now, that seems to be more of an old school style mentality, but when it comes to big business, who knows, man?
We definitely can't do it in the NBA anymore. That league, Jesus Christ, man. If you look at the way they played in the 90s, the 80s, and even the early 2000s compared to the way they play now, there's more flopping there than there is in soccer.
Yeah, but, man, those guys run up and down the court, and they attack the basket, and they expose themselves when they go out there to lay it up or dunk it. You're right. The defensive fouls aren't like they used to be where you could just take someone out. All right, shoot your free throws. Now they have flagrant one, flagrant two. But I've noticed a lot of people are landing awkwardly because you're up in the air, you know, and all it takes is some sort of a hit to the hip or upper body, and you're not landing like you thought you were going to land, you know, which means your feet aren't landing, you know, where you wanted to, like on your toes or maybe flat, depending on if you went straight up and down.
But do you remember what it was like to turn the corner and go towards the basket and see someone like a Charles Oakley or someone step in, or a Dennis Rodman, and you go, oh my God, this is not going to end well. You know, this is going to be terrible. There were some monsters back then, dude, that would just make A.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, tonight, PFL, light heavyweights and welterweights. And I think the easy answer is McDonald versus Millender. But is there another fight you might be looking forward to? We got Cooper versus Poney. Cooper's a former champ. We got Emiliano Sordi, who had a perfect 2019 against Chris Camozzi, former UFC fighter and glory. We got Shoeface versus Tom Lawler. Kind of cool to see Tom Lawler back in the action. He's been dabbling in pro wrestling and submission grappling, and Antonio Carlos Jr. was recently in the UFC. Cesar Ferreira was in the UFC. Sadu Busi is a homegrown talent for PFL, much like Emiliano Sordi and Ray Cooper. And then Dan Spahn, who was actually one of our tough correspondents in one of the seasons years ago. He's down there at the bottom. He's the opening bout, but what are you looking forward to on tonight's PFL 2021 Week 2 card?
Well, let me make one thing clear. Do not follow Tom Lawler on social media. Did you see that, by the way?
No. What did he do?
When he weighed in with a sign that said, don't follow me on Twitter, and it had his Twitter handle on it. I thought that was pretty interesting. And I know if I didn't already follow him, I probably would have just for that.
Right.
But Camozzi and Sordi, I think, is going to be interesting. But I'll tell you what, I know this is low-hanging fruit, but the main event has got me even more intrigued, just because the way Curtis he keeps putting these things out on social media, like, mark my words. Like, he's putting so much into this fight that it's making me think, like, God, the confidence level on this kid is a lot. Like, if you're Rory McDonald, remember remember, Rory's had his issues. Okay, he's not the dominant force that he was back in the UFC. He's had a tough time in some fights. He's got that nose thing going on. He's come out and said that it's not fun hurting his opponents. He's just not that like killer that we used to know. Curtis has made this very interesting. He's made it so that I can't miss it. Just if you put it, if you put the names on there, I'm excited. But the way he sold the fight, I'm really excited. So yeah, I really don't want to miss that main event.
Well, it's all going to come down to takedown defense, because I think Rory will look to take the fight down to the ground. That's one thing about PFL. I love a lot of things about PFL, but one thing it also encourages is, like, on the one hand, you think that those extra bonus points are valuable because, A, it gets you into the playoffs. But what's the point of being in the playoffs if you're not healthy? And I think veteran fighters can be dominant and still pick up injuries. You know what I mean? Like, look at Robert Whittaker. He can't fight in 6 weeks for a world title because he's got injuries, yet he was dominant over Kelvin Gastelum. These guys have to fight in about 6 weeks again. So I think, like it or not, a lot of fighters, if they look like they have a winnable matchup and they can wrestle and maybe look for submission or some ground and pound, but stay healthy, then they will. And I think Rory might look to do that, especially against Millender, who he's going to give up a reach advantage, height advantage. And Millender has been susceptible to getting beaten by fighters that take him to the ground, you know. But if it remains standing, goes, this one's going to be fireworks. If it goes to the ground, it's going to be up to Millender and the work he's put in to getting back up. Honestly, forget about submissions from the bottom. Forget about elbows from the bottom. Get up. It seems to be like getting up is the smartest thing you can do no matter what. Unless you are just an actual Brazilian jiu-jitsu ace who has a lot of wrestling so that, you know, you can keep that top position, you can get the sweep, you can ground and pound. But for the most part, I just don't see how getting up should, you know, isn't the most important thing. I hate it when they close the guard and lock their feet, you know, maybe for a second if you got your brain rattled. But as soon as you can, open your guard. Maybe put a foot on one of the guys' hips. Start looking for ways to, you know, butt scoot. If you get your back to the fence, get up. Do whatever it takes. But that's what I want Millender to do, especially if it happens early, because Rory's one of those rinse and repeat guys as well.
I'll tell you this much. This is the UFC. This is Bellator. I think PFL and ONE are really closing the gap on number two. But I think as a group, collectively, the three of them have closed a little bit more of the gap. Now, they're not close, but they're closing in on the UFC a little bit because they're doing things that the UFC doesn't do. And I'm honestly, I get excited to see ONE Championship. I get excited to see PFL. Whenever there's a Grand Prix, I'm stoked to find out what's going to happen there. Some of the names that have come out, I mean, think about it, Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson. Right, seeing Anthony Pettis and Verdum now over at PFL, and we get to see Rory McDonald, even though he was signed before. But Eddie Alvarez and DJ, like, they're making these moves that are making you not want to miss these fights. So I'm really, really, really excited for things outside of the UFC. UFC's great. They're always going to put on great cards. And they add their things with Dana White's Contender Series. They're trying to bring back Tough. I get it. But there are some things to these seasons, these tournaments, these Grand Prix. I love that shit too, man. But overall, I think if you're a combat sports fan, you got to be happy.
Yeah. All right. Well, the info on tonight is 8:30 Eastern. Sorry, 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific. The first fight starts on ESPN Plus, the same channel you use to watch UFC Fight Nights and UFC Prelims. You can watch the prelims for PFL there. And then at 9 p.m. Eastern, sorry, again, 6 p.m. Eastern. What the fuck? Hold on. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. It can't be right, guys. Yeah, it is right. That is right. Things move over to ESPN2. Tapology, you're getting me. You're making me look like a fool here. ESPN2, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific for the main card, which features the main event of Rory McDonald versus Curtis Millender. These are all going to be light heavyweights and welterweights. Last week it was lightweights and featherweights. Moving on to Saturday night, we have the UFC on ESPN 23. Dominic Reyes versus Jiří Procházka in the main event. Cub Swanson versus Giga Chikadze in the co-main event. What are your thoughts on this card?
I think Giga and Cub is going to be absolute fireworks. I don't know. Those guys just don't have it in them to make a boring fight, let alone putting them together. I think that's going to be so much fun. But it's going to tell us a lot, right? Because it's so weird. You know, like, we grew up with a guy like Cub Swanson being that young cat that nobody, that everybody overlooks. And now he's that established veteran. And Giga is just kind of the guy that's coming to MMA and trying to make his name there off of Cub. It's so weird to have that reversed on us. But I think that's going to be that, to me, that has Fight of the Night written all over it.
Yeah, no doubt. And for those fights, folks, if you're wondering, the prelims are going to start on ESPN2 and ESPN Plus at 7 p.m. Eastern. This is Saturday night. Randa Marcos versus Luana Pinedo. Gabriel Benitez versus Jonathan Pierce. TJ Brown versus Kai Kamaka III. Sam Hughes versus Loma Lukbongni. Did I say that right? Lukbongni.
I like it.
Yeah. KB Buehler versus Andreas Michalaitis. Felipe Colorado. Calaris versus Luke Sanders. For some reason, I feel like it's been pronounced someone else. I think when I've listened to Dan's breakdowns on his podcast, Protect Ya Neck, I've heard him pronounce it another way. Luke Bunai, whatever. Anyway, those are those fights. And then on the main card, it's ESPN2 and ESPN Plus. And those are 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. Reyes versus Prochaska. Chikadze versus Swanson, Kutalaba versus Jacoby, Christoph Jocko versus Sean Strickland, Mirab Davishvili versus Cody Stamen, Poliana Boteo versus Luana Carolina. So, I mean, we're pretty spoiled, man. Fights on a Wednesday, fights on a Thursday, get Friday off, and then fights on a Saturday. No disrespect. I'm sure there's action on the UFC Fight Pass, probably for LFA. I think I saw CES as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about, I guess, the big four.
Yeah, they sprinkle in NFL draft.
I mean, NFL draft tonight, yeah. So I'm going
to better order in.
Be working these two TVs right here. Some of the latest news, let's talk about that. McGregor did give 500 Gs to a charity in Louisiana to help kids, except it wasn't the Good Fight Foundation. It was the Boys and Girls Club. So Poirier thanked him because it's going to help his home state, you know, and that made him happy, but it's not going to help. It's not going to be for the Good Fight Foundation, but he did give $500,000. Rumble Johnson and Yoel Romero have been doing some media. They're predicting fireworks. And we're all definitely looking forward to that. One championship has two fight cards in May. They had three in April, May 7th and May 21. So it's definitely getting around the corner, and that'll advance things in their Grand Prix. You want to say anything about either of those two news pieces?
Yeah, I'm so confused by this 500 grand thing because I understand where Dustin Poirier is coming from. He has a fight with Conor McGregor coming up. So I don't think he wants to give ground to Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor obviously did that to kind of be a dick. I know that he's given up a lot of money, but don't get it twisted. There's a lot of mental warfare involved in a play like that. So I understand Dustin Poirier not coming out and going, "Can you believe this guy completely screwed the foundation? He did this, he did that," because that's probably what Conor McGregor wants. Deep down inside, I have to imagine Dustin Poirier feels very differently about that. Anytime you have money that you're not expecting, a lot of us, it's human nature, we spent it before we've even gotten it, right? Now, I'm not saying that he's already gone out and bought things or anything, but in his mind and his staff or whoever works there, there's probably been time and effort that's been put in to when we get that 500 grand, this is what we would like to do with it. And a project like that, if you don't get to do it, probably hurts. So it's weird because I don't want to sit here and argue something when Dustin Poirier is saying he's just happy it's going to the community. I feel dumb arguing for him. But I do feel like that was kind of a dick move for Connor to do that. I get it. I think it was kind of a dick move for Dustin to put that out in public. But at the end of the day, we don't know the plans that the Good Fight Foundation had. And that's just – that's kind of the reverse of what's trying to be accomplished here, guys. Like, two people set out and they made this calculation of this is what we're going to do. And we all thought it was a great thing. And at the end of the day, it's going to help some people. But it was a little malicious to do it that way. I thought that was kind of a dick move.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. They're going to fight. And I'm just hoping between now and then, the Good Fight Foundation gets the 500 grand donation. There's got to be someone out there with more than enough money that can maybe step up, especially someone that believes in giving some of your wealth to charity. But you're right, Goes. I didn't think of it that way. I bet you they already kind of had plans. Because, man, they got as close to when the McGregor team was asking for wiring instructions, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I could definitely see somebody, you know, maybe already having a plan, setting things in motion for whatever it was they were going to do with that money. And now that didn't happen. But
just think about it.
Made it pretty cool ever since the news came out that McGregor donated 500 grand to a charity in Louisiana. He's moving on. But hopefully there's a backup plan in there somewhere for Good Fight to get their money.
I hope so, because we never know what that money was going to go to. But think about it, man. If they went and they spoke to a high school and said, "Hey, we know your gym just got flooded. Guess what? We're coming in to save the day." Like, all that time and effort that goes into that, like, something had to have been in the works. And it sucks that probably won't happen now.
I agree. And then you hear that the whiskey brand is you know, made them another 600 million. I think I had heard 300 million, but now I'm reading 600 million. The money's there, you know what I mean? And by the way, it appears that Adi Attar may have even been a partner. I'm happy for him, man. I'm happy for Adi. He's a SoCal guy. I remember the day he took over for the agency that was headed by Ken Pavia and Nathan Brodnicks. And I remember him on day one, just not day one, but I went into that office pretty soon after they took over, and they were like, they had a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and they were learning about MMA. And their first guy, I believe, was Bisping. That was they took over the agency, right? But I think their first free agency signing was Bisping. I don't think Bisping was with Pavia. And that started the wheels in motion, you know, and then they got McGregor at one point. I remember when they wined and dined him, you know, they brought in McGregor to the Cosmopolitan. Adi had a contact there and they clicked, and they've been in business together, you know, since then. And now they got Adesanya and Cyborg. They had Tony, no longer have Tony, but they've done well for themselves. So for Adi to be astute and say, somehow let me be a minor owner or partner in this whiskey brand, but to see him listed as somebody that can benefit from that, that's awesome. He's had some family tragedies as well, so that's just great to secure your family, you know, leaving something behind. And speaking of fighters being with agencies for a long time, John Jones won't be with his agency going forward. The first round management team, headed by the Kawa brothers, they were with John Jones for a long time. I remember when they brought John Jones to our studio, John Jones hadn't even won the title yet. I think the focus was Thiago Alves when he was fighting GSP, and Jones was on the undercard. I can't remember if he fought Bonner on that card or what it was. But I remember meeting John Jones, and he was all excited about his first Breitling watch and just kind of acting like a young, goofy character guy, you know? And look at all the things they did together. But they're not working together anymore, and both sides seem gracious. In fact, even Jones going so far to say, "We're family and we'll always be family." Now, I don't know if this had anything to do with what's, you know, the negotiations stall or the negotiations itself, lack of going on for Ngannou versus Jones, which is now looking more like Lewis versus Ngannou. And Lewis and Jones are actually both represented by that management team. So I don't know if that complicated things or what, but it didn't look like a split, you know, that was acrimonious or anything like that. But either way, I wonder what will happen, you know, going forward.
I think you're right on all fronts. It could be a little bit of all of that. It could be just one of those things. But, yeah, that's a relationship that's been together. They've been together for a long time. So I imagine making such a big move, the heavyweight, there had to have been some kind of big forecast, some big plan. And things just don't seem to be going that way for John. So I think John just is looking for something different. Now, who knows? It could be something on the outside that's affecting it, or it might have to be John Jones that has to look at himself and say, maybe I put myself in this situation. If he changes management and these things keep happening, then he's going to have to look within himself and go, shit, I might have been the problem here, right? But it's got to be something, because he's one of the greatest fighters of all time. We all want to see him fight. Who wouldn't want him to see him fight Francis Ngannou? But at the end of the day, it's looking like we're not going to get that fight.
Yeah, the number 30 million is being thrown around by Dana White. John Jones refuted and said, I never even said that number, you know. But remember, we were all, when we were wondering, I wonder what the number is. We said, we heard Derek say, I'll take 8 million. So we knew that John probably thought that was less than what he wanted to make. Derek was willing to take, but we didn't know what offended the UFC so much that they wanted to move on. Dana then says it's 30. John says, I never said that. Could he have said 29 or 25 or even 20? I don't know. See, we don't have really a scale of knowing, you know, what this fight's worth, you know, to both sides. We have ideas, you know, but I don't know, man. that to me sounds like a stadium fight. I just don't see how both guys don't at least make 10. Now, I don't know if it works out to, hey, look, what we pay is a mil or two or three. Like when Nate fought Connor the second time and they sold 1.65 million pay-per-views, I remember that one distinctly. Connor's was 3 million. Nate was 2 million. That was just to show. Then from there, they get percentages of the pay-per-view. Some negotiate more. Some negotiate less. Nate might have just gotten his two and bounced, or he might have gotten a quarter per pay-per-view, a dollar per pay-per-view. It's easier to just say, let's say he got a dollar. Well, that means we know he got $1.65 million in addition to the two. Nice payday for Nate. Connor's, no. Connor, I'm sure, probably negotiates. First $500,000, I get $2. The next $500,000, I get $5. And the last, you know, he has a good idea of what he's worth. So I could see him negotiating, you know, a fight like that, at least 20 million. I came to the conclusion it was 25 because I remember during the Floyd negotiations, he said, this is four times as much as I've ever been paid. And the rumors were that Floyd was getting three and he was getting one, or his net worth or something. So I thought, he must have just got paid 25 for Nate. How did he get to 25? I don't know, but 3 million plus another 22 in pay-per-view, who knows? But those are just all rough numbers. They're all just guesses, you know what I mean? So John definitely isn't worth what Connor's worth, but he's definitely not, you know, a 10 and 10 guy or 12 and 12 guy, wherever they're at right now. So where is he? Gee, I don't know, but I remember him in D.C. selling over a million once or getting close. And then the rest of the time, I remember 500,000, 700,000, numbers like that. You know, what does that equate to? I guess I always pictured John being a 5 to 10 million guy per fight, maybe when it was all said and done, especially the big ones.
But you brought up DC, and that's important because DC was a big part of that equation. The heat that they had was a big part of that equation. So when you look at what else is out there for John Jones, none of those other matchups that are out there are that sexy that could make him that much money. This one is because it's the heavyweight champion against the former light heavyweight champion, one of the greatest fighters of all time. So you have this one fight here that could make this much money. But then after that, everything else is like down here. You know what I mean? So I don't understand. I'm no manager. I'm no fighter. But I would imagine settling for here would make more sense than.
And we know they're going to get a gate, and we know they're going to get a stadium, you know, a full stadium, because the one with Connor and Dustin in September, in July, is already sold out. So as long as they schedule past that, and the way things are looking, you know, with the virus and all, they could probably negotiate something for August or September with a full crowd at the T-Mobile Arena. Or maybe we can even start picturing the inevitable stadium show here at the Allegiant Stadium with 50 or 60,000 if you have the right people. And I think Ngannou and Jones is one hell of a start. I don't know if you have to have Connor on that one or not. But toss in a Diaz brother and Rose or, you know, whoever the big boys are, the BMF, maybe make the BMF on that card. And I'm telling you, I think you can do something that would be pretty epic, where you fill up that stadium. You know what I mean?
Now think about this. If you're John Jones, maybe you take a little less, but what if you beat Francis Ngannou, which you probably think that I would imagine that you're going to beat him. Now you got a lot of power, because that heavyweight, you can make a lot of matchups there that I think people would watch. I would pay to see Derek Lewis fight John Jones. I would pay to see Stipe Miocic fight John Jones. There's a lot of matchups there that I care more about than him going back down to light heavyweight and facing those guys.
Yeah. We'll see, but he hasn't fought since 2020, early in 2020, and then he gave up his title in the summer of 2020. Feel like the hand has just been misplayed. You know, if you don't get this title fight, feel like you misplayed your hand. But we also thought that of Masvidal when he didn't fight Kamaru the first time, and it was Gilbert Burns that was flying. And we were like, he would have never guessed that Burns was going to get coronavirus and he'd get the call and they would satisfy his financial demands. But either way, it worked out. You know, it worked out for him. Maybe it works out a month later or 2 months later. So some of these guys stick to their guns, and when it works out, You tend to be a little bit more on the stubborn side. But with John, he's saying he's been underpaid, and he says, I'm not chasing that money. I just want to get paid what I'm worth going forward, especially if I'm going to take risky fights in a weight class above where I've normally competed, and I'm older now. All good points, you know? And now I think he's got the leverage to say, you're filling up stadiums, you know, so you're getting your gate. You know, you can no longer play the card of, we're suffering because we still kept every employee, you know, everybody had a job here at the UFC. We missed out on the gate and this and that. Remember that video that he did, Dana White? But then he also said, we had our biggest year ever. You know what I mean? So it's like the money seemed to still be there. Maybe it'll be a fresh look. I know there's a post on MMA Junkie. Ali Abdelaziz, who manages a lot of fighters, says he's willing to help out. He says he's very humbled by all those people saying, hey, maybe Ali should negotiate this one for you, or maybe just somebody else independently, you know, steps in and does this. You know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But at this point in time, it does look like Lewis versus Ngannou.
Here's the last point I want to make about John Jones, and it's something that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about, but I think it's a big deal. Forget about the money. Forget about John Jones's fighting career and what direction it's going in. I want to know, what role did first round management, particularly Malki Kawa, play in just maybe keeping John Jones's personal life in order, in line? What adjustments did he make to keep John safe from getting into trouble outside of the octagon? Is that going to go away? Does that mean now that John Jones is on his own, doing his own thing? That to me can be scary as well. We can't forget about that. John has had problems in the past. And I have to imagine that first round management tried to make adjustments and whatever, but for the last year, he's been okay. That seems to maybe go away.
They accuse them of being enablers because they haven't been able to control them. But you're right. Maybe they've mitigated a lot more of the damage that could have taken place. They did get him Nike at one point, you know, and I'm sure they've probably had some other successes because John's not dumb. I know he does some dumb things, but he's had two brothers in the NFL, and he probably rubs elbows with a lot of top dogs, you know. So he probably, the word filters to him on where he can possibly make some money and Malky's also represented NFL people, so I'm sure they've probably figured out a way to make some money for the guy. You know, he doesn't have a whiskey brand or anything like that. McGregor just seems to be head and shoulders above everybody else and when it comes to the business acumen. But I don't know. I don't know, Goz. I don't know if he'll look back one day and see how much money was left, you know, on the table, whether it was due to his tomfoolery or what. But like I say, his brothers have negotiated. Both of his brothers have Super Bowl rings, and both of them have negotiated lucrative free agency contracts with other teams other than the teams they were drafted by. So they've run through all that, you know, and so John's had resources there available to him, even if he thought, well, we're all learning here along the way, you know, when it comes to my MMA career. But I don't know, man. I don't know. And I think that's what it boils down to, is I think he's realizing, holy shit, I'm no longer in my mid-20s or late 20s or even early 30s. He's not 31 or 32 or anything like that. And how many of these fights do I get? And, oh, wow, look how hard Francis Ngannou is. And Francis Ngannou at times looks more athletic than some light heavyweights. Mm-hmm. You know, yet he's still got the power, and you're not seeing huffing and puffing. Because every fighter, no matter what, even the perfect ones, even the ones that are close to perfect, have some sort of a liability, you know, a hole. Even Habib would probably tell you, God, if I can't stop someone from taking them down, you know, yeah, I trust these hands, but I definitely trust my wrestling and ground and pound more. So even he has, you know, a slight deficiency probably in the striking department. Everything else is probably, you know, perfect. But every single fighter, no matter what you look at, has some sort of a deficiency. And, but, you know, Francis is plugging a few of those up. And I don't know, you know, Jones can always go back and go, ah, y'all are pissing me off. I want to break records in light heavyweight. The UFC's not cooperating. I'll just take this muscle off and get back to 205. You know, he wouldn't be champ, and I don't know what kind of a price he could negotiate, but could always do that.
You brought up Ngannou. Did you see the reception he got back home?
Oh, in Cameroon. I'm glad you brought that up. That was awesome.
Yeah, putting the belt on his mom and all that and just going through the streets in that car. It was like the president was going through, right? Like, I mean, they were going bananas over there. It was so cool to watch.
Yeah. He apparently, that's where he went after the fights in Jacksonville, because he was in the corner of Kamaru Usman at UFC 261. And it looks like from there he went back to Cameroon, where he's from. And, yeah, they gave him a reception. They paraded him through town. And he looked like he moved a lot of people from his home country of Cameroon. He worked hard. And I think he's got a message to not give up on yourself, to work hard, to chase your dreams. You know, so I'm happy for him. And yeah, no, that's I can't say the other thing. But there's just stuff I've heard about Francis Ngannou that's really made me respect him even more. Seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's doing the right things.
Mm-hmm.
All right, folks, listen, we got to get on out of here. Thank you, as always, for your support here. On Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, MMA Junkie Radio. Always appreciate you guys tuning in. Thank you to our guest, Stitch Duran, a longtime boxing and MMA cut man. And now that things are opening up, he's going to start traveling. Maybe we'll see him more in the MMA circles. But as of late, he's been killing it, you know, with Top Rank. Every time I was tuning in on the weekends, he was in that MGM bubble, and he was there. He was doing stuff there. And then I did see him at Triller with the Ben Askren and Jake Paul fight. But now as things open up and he starts to travel more, maybe we'll see him back in Bare Knuckle, or I don't even remember what he did last. Was it PFL or Bellator? Who was he last with there? Do you remember? It may have been PFL. Bellator. Was it Bellator? I don't know. But I like to see him back in MMA, you know, occasionally. And I think PFL has a good schedule where they take – you already know it pretty much for the whole year. I think Bellator and UFC can say, well, this is what we're doing through July. You know, I don't know that they can fill it in, but PFL is pretty structured in what they do, and then he can plug and play with boxing. You know,
mm-hmm.
Boxing is definitely keeping him busy. Tyson Fury. That must be cool, you know, right now. Good times. He went from Vladimir Klitschko to Tyson Fury, so he's pretty lucky.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have a surprise coming up in a week or so.
Yeah, and how about him filming that movie? Sounds like you know more than I do, but does that seem like a cool project?
It is a movie that a friend of ours that went on a tour talked about. I believe it's that one.
Well, you'll have to fill me in because you know I have the memory of a goldfish. All right, folks, keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the weekend. As always, tonight is PFL. Tomorrow we have, I believe, LFA and CES on UFC Fight Pass. MMA Junkie's covering all these events, including last night's one on TNT4 and this weekend's UFC on ESPN 23. We've been having great traffic on our website, so we thank you all. I know some of you all are like, what is this, a boxing website? Because we've posted a lot of stuff related to Triller and Jake Paul. What do you want from us? He fought an MMA guy. He went to an MMA event the following weekend. He had a confrontation with a former MMA champion, and he's looking to fight other MMA people. It's kind of tied to MMA, you know, in a way, and he's playing a good heel role. Shout out to Jake Paul in the sense that him and his brother have been killers on YouTube, which brought him to the position of being not your normal typical tough guys. The normal typical tough guys, the internet tough guys, just say shit and then hope they're never confronted, in the streets. But these guys apparently have some skills, you know, and they wrestle, they throw some hands, and then they use some of that money to get good trainers, and they're doing well. Now, that doesn't mean that I still won't pick against them or that, you know, at times I feel like they're, to me, a little geeky and nerdy. But goddamn, man, they got some sweet KOs and they're living life and all that. But hey, man, if people are talking about it, just because you might not like it, but millions of others are, it's our job to cover it. But I just don't think that we're in any way out of line because everything he's associated with lately has been MMA. So anyway, and good luck to your teams in whatever direction they go in the NFL draft. I think we're going to wind up with Trey Lance goes.
Think so?
Yeah. What's so funny?
Because I was doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that wave. All right, guys. We're out of here. Go out there and be a champion.